You've probably heard the word holy before, or at least sang it in a church song once or twice. And for most people, this idea is really just connected to being a morally good person. So God is holy because he's morally perfect.
Yeah, that is part of it. But in the Bible, the idea of holiness is even bigger and more rich. What it's really describing is how God is the creative force behind the whole universe. He's the one and only being with the power to make a world full of such beauty and life. And so all these abilities, they make God utterly unique, which is the meaning of the word holy. So a helpful way to think about God's holiness is by using the sun as a metaphor. The sun is unique, at least within our solar system, and it's really powerful. It's the source of all this beautiful life on our planet. And so you could say that the sun is holy. And you can actually take this metaphor even further in that the whole area around the sun is also holy.
Yeah, because the closer you get to the sun, the more intense it gets.
Yeah, exactly. So that very power and goodness that generates all this life is also dangerous. I mean, the sun, if you get too close, will annihilate you. And in the same way, there's this paradox at the heart of God's own holiness, because if you're impure, his presence is dangerous to you. And not because it's bad, but because it's so good. And so the first time we see this paradox of God's holiness, it's in the story of Moses and the burning bush.
So God tells Moses to take off his sandals because he's standing on holy ground. And Moses covers his face in fear, and God says, hey, don't come any closer. It's intense.
It's actually that intensity of God's holiness that's explored even more in the stories about Israel's temple, which was the main place where God's holy presence was located. And at the center of the temple was this room called the Most Holy Place, the hot spot of God's presence. And whether you're an Israelite living in the land around the temple or a priest working right in the temple, you're in proximity to God's holy presence, which is dangerous.
Yeah, this is a problem. So how's it supposed to work?
Well, in the Bible, the solution is that you need to become pure.
So like being morally pure.
Yeah, and that's easy enough to understand. But the Bible spends a lot of time talking about another kind of purity, being ritually pure, which is a state where you separate yourself from anything related to death, like touching things like diseased skin or dead bodies or even certain bodily fluids. All these make you impure. And becoming ritually impure isn't necessarily sinful. What's wrong is waltzing into God's presence when you're in an impure state. And so that's why God gave the Israelites very clear instructions for knowing when they were impure, steps to become pure, so that they could go into the temple again.
So that's what the book of Leviticus is about.
Right. But it doesn't stop there. This idea keeps developing. So later in the scriptures, we find this really interesting story by a prophet named Isaiah. And he has this crazy vision where he's in the temple and he's right in God's presence. He's totally terrified.
Yeah, he knows the rules. He shouldn't even be in there. And he's worried about being destroyed.
And then this crazy creature called a seraphim.
Yeah, that is a crazy creature.
Totally. So it flies over with a hot coal, and then it sears Isaiah's lips with the coal and says something really weird. Your guilt is taken away, and your sin is atoned for.
So this burning coal somehow makes Isaiah pure.
Yeah, it's remarkable because normally if you touch something impure, it transfers its impurity to you. But now here's this new idea where you have this coal, this very holy and pure object, and it touches Isaiah and it transfers its purity to him. Isaiah is not destroyed by God's holiness. He's transformed by it. I mean, the implications of this are just huge. But there's one more development, this time from another prophet, Ezekiel. And he has this vision where he's standing at the temple and he sees water trickling out from it. And then that water turns into a stream and then it grows into a deep river that starts flowing through the desert, leaving this trail of green trees behind it. And then it flows into the Dead Sea, making everything fresh and alive.
So instead of becoming pure first and then going into the temple, here God's holiness comes out from the temple, making things pure and bringing them to life. What does it all mean?
So we don't know until we meet this man, Jesus. And he claims that he's fulfilling all of these ancient visions, but in surprising new ways. So Jesus, he went around touching people who are impure, people with skin diseases, a woman with chronic bleeding, or dead people. And when he touches them, their impurity should transfer over to Jesus. But instead, Jesus's purity transfers to them and actually heals their bodies.
Jesus is like that holy coal in Isaiah's vision.
Right. And Jesus claimed that he was the human embodiment of God's own holiness, and that he and his followers were now God's temple, so that through them, God's holy presence would go out into the world and bring life and healing and hope. And so this is why Jesus described his followers as having streams of living water flowing out of them.
So this is our part of the story where we find ourselves now, but where's this all heading?
So the last pages of the Bible end with a final vision about God's holiness. This time it's by a guy named John. And in his vision, we see the whole world made completely new. The entire earth has become God's temple. And Ezekiel's river is there, flowing out of God's presence, immersing all of creation, removing all impurity, and bringing everything back to life.
We believe the Bible is one complete narrative, so we're making...
Hopefully that was a little bit enlightening for you, especially the sun at the beginning. Yeah, a few of you got that. So this morning I wanted to talk with you about this word holiness. When you hear the word holiness, what does it mean to you? If we play a game of word association, what's another word that you might come up with that might just pop to your mind if I said holiness? Sorry? Pure. Perfect. Good. Refined. Goody two shoes, sorry.
I think about the black hole I've been studying lately.
Black hole? Yeah. Anything else? Okay. So this idea of holiness, this idea of being set apart, this idea of being pure. When I think about trying to become holy myself, trying to experience this holiness, I think of this scripture from the Bible, and it says, "Be holy because I am holy." God says, "Be holy because I am holy." And I think I spoke about this last week. I can never be as perfect as God. And so sometimes I get caught in this trap of trying and trying to be good. I'm trying to be good. I'm trying to be a good person. And when I was thinking about this, I was thinking about this scripture of this man that's at the pool of Bethesda, and he's trying to get well. He's trying and trying. He's been there for 38 years trying. Wouldn't he be exhausted from trying? Wouldn't he feel hopeless from trying? And sometimes when we keep trying to do things on our own and we keep trying and trying to get well on our own, we start to lose hope. We start to think, there's no one here to help me. I need some help. I can't do this on my own. And I think that you could see it as cruel that Jesus would ask him, "Do you want to get well? I've been here for 38 years. Come on, do I want to get well?" And in his answer, you see the man's hopelessness. I've been here for 38 years. I've been trying and trying, but there's no one here to help me. When Jesus asks the question, he isn't asking it to mock him. He's asking him, "Do you want to get well?" Because he wants to know the man's heart. He wants to know if he really wants to get well. Because sometimes we can get so comfortable with being unwell, we can get so used to being unwell that it just becomes the norm and we just accept it. Or sometimes we can get so used to being unholy that we just get used to it. Sometimes we get so used to making decisions that perhaps God doesn't want us to make, that it just becomes the norm, it just becomes comfortable for us. And so Jesus is asking, do you actually want to get well? Do you want to be well? What the man didn't know is that Jesus was ultimately the answer to his healing. And when Jesus told him to get up, he got up, took his mat, and he was healed. know, sometimes we don't recognize Jesus as our best help. Sometimes we get distracted by things and we think that other things are better for us in the moment. We don't think about the long term. We think in the moment, I prefer to do this. But in the long term, Jesus is our best help. And we need to center our lives around Jesus. And you know, I've been thinking about this lately. I've been a little bit distracted by things. And sometimes, I'm going to draw a vase. Please don't judge my vase. Oh, that worked out better than I thought. Okay. Sometimes, we can get so distracted by things and we fill our lives with the things that are important and things that we see as important. So, you know, I'm going to put my family in here. Perhaps I work, so I'm going to, you know, fill my time up with work. I've got some hobbies that I really enjoy. My dog is really important, so I'm just going to... This is a terrible picture of my dog. Put my dog in there. And there's some things that I need to get the house clean. It's really important. There's no door to my house. It's very difficult. What else? What else could I fill my life with? No, have I got it all? Friends, yeah, absolutely. So I want to spend time with my friends, make sure I'm catching up with them. It's important to be social.
Money.
Yeah, I can be focused on money, getting some money.
Shopping.
I'm going to draw a bag for shopping. And sport. So all these things that I think are important, and you know, these things are important in people's lives. And then I try to fit God in around them. So just say, God's pretty big. He's pretty hard to include. But okay, just say this son represents God, okay? I try to fit this in there. And it's really hard to fit that in because I didn't put that in first. Have you seen that display that when, if you have a vase and you put the large items in first, the most important items in first, that's a big rock, there we go. And then we put the next most important items in, and then we're able to fill it with all the other things that perhaps are not as important. And it's so much easier for them to fit in. You know, sometimes I do this with my life. I try to fill my life with other things and I try to fit God in around those other things when actually I need to start with God in the center of my life. We all do, yeah. And that's what happens when I try to be holy as well. If I don't center my life around Jesus and I try to be holy with all that other stuff going on, it's not going to work. I need to center my life around Jesus because he is the one that makes me holy. In order to experience this transformation, in order to experience this wellness that Jesus offers, we also need to take action. We need to make a step. We need to step out. We can't just sit there and wait for it to happen. So we might come to church and we might sit here waiting for God to give us peace in our hearts, or we might come and sit in a service and we might wait for transformation to happen in our lives. But nothing's going to happen until we actually step out and step forward. Jesus said to the man, "Stand up and take your mat." And he stood up, he was healed, and he took his mat. And I just think of the outrage of all the people in the temple that this man was carrying his mat on the Sabbath. It sounds silly to us now that, you know, you can't carry something on a Sabbath day. You can't carry something on a day of rest. But back then, it was one of the rules. You can't carry things. You can't work on this Sabbath, on this day of rest. But Jesus came to transform the world. And he required that man to take action, that man to take a step forward in faith. And you know, sometimes when we're trying and trying and trying to get well, sometimes we're trying to fit it in around all the chaos that's going on in our lives. And we actually need to pause. We need to listen to what God's saying to us. And we need to take the step that he asks us to take. And it's really difficult because sometimes we've been so comfortable with the way things have been that it's a risk stepping out and making a change. Sometimes we've been so comfortable with being unwell. And we know that we want to be well, and we know how good it is to be well, but it's so difficult to take that step towards being well. For example, I love chocolate. Chocolate's great, isn't it? It's delicious. It's fabulous. Chocolate is terrible for my health. In large quantities. Because, you know, I hear that, you know, a few squares here and there are okay. But sometimes I get so stuck in the pattern of eating junk food, and I know that it's not good for me, right? And I know that it's not making me well, but I get so stuck in the pattern of eating these things that it's hard for me to get out. I'm so comfortable with that. And sometimes it's like that with our lives as well. We get so comfortable with living a certain way that when Jesus asks us to separate ourselves, to step out, to set ourselves apart, that it's really difficult to do. But if we look at the story of the man that was beside the pool, it was 100% worth it for him to take that step, to move forward. It resulted in healing and wholeness for him. He would have been restored to his community. He would have been restored to his family. He wouldn't have spent the rest of his life sitting beside that pool, but he would have found new purpose and new meaning of his life. God calls us to set ourselves apart. He calls us to be holy. And he calls us to center our lives around him first. This morning, I want to invite you to reflect on where Jesus is in your life. Are you centering your life around him? Or are you trying to fit him in around everything else in your life? We're going to listen to a song this morning, and you might know it, you might have heard it before. If you'd like to sing along, you're invited to sing along. If you just need some time to reflect, or time to pray, time to ask Jesus to be the center of your life, and I encourage you to do that now. We've got some spots of prayer at the front, or you might like to pray where you are. Or you might like to speak to someone afterwards, but let this be the moment where you take action, where you step forward, where you say, Jesus, I want to be well. I want to experience this holiness that you offer me. Let's sing this song this morning.